Welcome back to our Total Sense Bite-Size episodes. I'm Tom Henske, and I'm here to help parents teach their kids about money.
Welcome back, everyone. We have another episode of Ask Tom, where parents come in and they ask questions about things that are going on either in their own household or some friends of a friend's or whatever it might be. We just talk about different money conversations as we're developing financial literacy in our kids. And I just share my thoughts on kind of, you know, where you might be able to go with the question that you have. So I have with me today, David from Westport. Hi, David. How are you?
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
I'm doing awesome. Awesome. So, all right. It's your dime. Go ahead and ask away. What do you got for me today?
So I know that you and I have similar outlooks in terms of finances and spending money and being financially stable slash secure. How did you best teach that to your kids, I guess? You know, I feel one of the things I'm most lucky about is my dad really, really did a great job teaching me and my siblings about finances. And I don't know if I think I did, but I don't know if I actually passed the message along as well as my dad did. So how did you convey, you know, what you believe in to your children?
You know, it's a tough one, right? Because we never get it right. You have to realize that even in my house, I'm supposed to be the financial guru. And there are, as my kids are getting older, I realize, wow, I dropped the ball on that one. I could have been better on this one. I think first and foremost, they look at you and they see how you act. And so it's sometimes less of what you say and more of what you do. You know, having said that, you know, the most important lesson, I think, that in a town that's an affluent town, for example, is this whole concept of keeping up with the Joneses. And when I think about that, I like to plant these little seeds, these little phrases in the kids' heads, because I feel like while they roll their eyes today at what we're saying, later on, they'll remember that we said these things. So the keeping up with the Joneses is basically the idea, you know what that is. It's spending money to try and match what everyone else is doing. And that becomes super important when they get into their real lives and they start going out and socializing and then buying things, whether that be an apartment or a home or whatever, or a car or whatever it might be. So I think that that's the key. You never get it 100% right. You just don't. But I think, you know, these little phrases that you can lay out there are super important. So another one that I love is you've heard me say this a million times. You pay now or you pay later, but you pay. You remember we talked about that one?
Absolutely. It's a great one. Just as a let everyone know about that. So Tom and I did a call with my oldest daughter who's living in New York about a month ago. And Tom gave this phrase, which was a great analogy with his boys when he was coaching soccer. He said, you could either pay now or you could pay later. If you pay now, you're going to run a lot in August and you're going to make it deeper into the tournament in whenever the season ends. I'm not sure when that is, September, October. Or you're not going to run now and you're going to sit home early and you're going to miss out on the end of the tournament. So after we did that call with my daughter, she asked me a question. I said, you could pay now or you could pay later. It's a great one. But thank you. That was helpful. And talking about my daughter, you know, how do you deal with kids who are living in, you know, in New York City? My daughter, as everyone could tell at this point in our conversation, you know, grew up in Westport, went to college for 4 years out of town and is now living in the city, and it's wildly expensive. You know, what are your suggestions or what would you tell your kids regarding living in such an expensive city?
Well, you think about it. How the heck does anyone who's 23, 24, 25, how do they even live in a city like New York or San Francisco or even Chicago for that matter? It's so expensive. Everything is expensive. So, and you can't tell your kids, don't go out and be social, right? Like that's part of being 23, 24, 25 years old, the ability to go out and hang out and have those memories. The issue is, at what cost? And, you know, we were just saying you pay now or you pay later, but you pay. what I always like to do is just talk to them about making good choices. And I think it's about opportunity costs and future value. So the example that we were talking about, we didn't use this exact math, but I started to think about it after we talked. And think about this math, David. This is crazy. If you just saved $100 a week, and then that's $400 a month, which is $4,800 per year. Think about this. If a 23-year-old just saved $4,800 per year and invested it at 10%, by the time they get to be age 63, ready for this? That's $2.5 million. Think about that for a second.
Amazing.
It's crazy, right? So like the trade-off is the pay now or pay it later. I don't know a 23-year-old who doesn't think that $2.5 million is an awful lot of money. In fact, I could probably say most adults would think that's an awful lot of money. You know why? It is a lot of money.
That's a great statistic. That's great. So, one other thing I've been thinking about, you know, as I knew we were getting on this call is, you know, in terms of savings plans, you know, when someone's 23, as my oldest daughter is now, you know, what do you suggest that young adults kind of look at towards savings plans at that age?
Well, the issue is there are a lot of different competing buckets for their money. And the best way to phrase it with, actually, this could work with a middle schooler, a high schooler, someone who's in college or after college, probably some adults too, is the whole three buckets of the money now bucket, the money later bucket, or the money much later bucket, right? So the money now bucket is going to be things like your emergency reserve fund. So you want to tell your kids, look, you need to have somewhere between, it depends on what situation they're in and how close they are to home and how much they could maybe rely on mom or dad if something went wrong. I think it's good to plant the 6 to 9 months living expenses in cash. But here's the issue that you run into. You also want them to save for the money much later. So when they start their job, they're going to hopefully have an employer-sponsored retirement plan, and you're going to want them to put money in there because we know time is on their side and compounding. And also, let's not forget about employer matches. So sometimes when you go to work for an employer, they may say, look, if you put in 3% of your income, we'll match the 3%. It's free money. So the question you're asking is a good one, but it's also a tough one, and it's more of an art than a science because they have a couple different buckets. And by the way, they might need to buy a car, or they might want to put a down payment on a house or an apartment. And that's that middle ground, that money later. So your answer to that question is a tough one. And I think it really is all three, that you put a little in each one, and then you just start to play with the percentages that you put in each one.
Got it. That's a great point that you brought up. I just want to mention this. So my daughter works for a Fortune 500 company. They have a 50% matching. So I think this year it's 23.5. Is that correct? The max?
Right. Yep.
You know, so they'll match, you know, almost $12,000 on that. You know, it's free money. And anybody who's not taking advantage of that is, you know, they're missing out on a gift. So that's something people should be paying attention to. And then Tom, when it comes to that, I know this is different than when you and I were younger. Are there Roth 401ks and non-Roth 401ks, and which one do you recommend for young adults?
Oh, this is such a hard question that you're asking, and I'm going to tell you why. So yes, they now have, most big companies have two options. They have the traditional 401k, which is you're putting in pre-tax dollars, which means you don't get taxed on the money now, but when it grows over the 40 years, remember that example I gave you earlier of the 2.5 million, then it comes out and it's all taxable. So there's this other one called the Roth 401k where you put in post-tax dollars, so you're paying the tax today, and then it's growing tax-free. And so there's this age-old debate of what's better, to put it in the Roth or to put it in the traditional 401k. It's a long conversation, but I want to just plant this seed for all the parents out there. The beauty of the Roth 401k is once the money's in there, when you look at it on your balance sheet, it's all there. That's all your money. There's no taxation going to be put on that money when you get to be in your 60s. You get lulled to sleep a little bit with the traditional 401k because while it might say $1 million that's in your traditional 401k, David, you and I both know that's not $1 million. It's $1 million minus whatever the tax is. So I think when they're younger, I really like the Roth because they're in a low tax bracket, right? So they could just put it in. They're not going to feel anything for it. It's going to grow. Hopefully it gets matched. And then it's going to grow tax-free forever. So not just the initial principal that you put in, but also the growth on it.
Mathematically, leaving out the optics, but mathematically, if you put in $1 million, you put in 700, 600, whatever the number is, you know, net of taxes, mathematically, when it grows, which way will you end up with a larger pot at the end of the day?
It's a good question in that it depends on what your tax bracket is going to be. So humor me for a second. Let me answer that by saying, if the tax bracket that you're putting in at is the same tax bracket that you're taking out at, then it's pretty much a push. Having said that, when you start to look at the tax brackets, you're probably more likely to be in a higher tax bracket at retirement, right? Because you're 23, you start off, you're not making as much money as maybe you might when you're 53, for example. Also remember that the gains are also going to be taxed. And sometimes people say, yeah, but in retirement, I won't be earning, so I'll be in a lower tax bracket. Well, yeah, until you start to think about required minimum distributions. And by the way, I don't know a whole lot of people who hope that they're in a lower tax bracket at retirement.
Absolutely. My dad's in his early 90s and is in a very high tax bracket, taking out all of his forced distributions.
It's kind of funny. Like, you have all the so-called financial gurus out there saying, max out your pre-tax 401k, da-da-da-da. They tell you that part, but they don't talk to you about the distribution phase, right? And anyone who's our age now, we have parents that are in the mandatory distribution phase, and we're seeing firsthand, it's like, wow, my parents did a great job saving. Wow, they are really getting penalized from a tax perspective because it's forcing them to be in the highest rate. And by the way, that then affects Social Security. So when you have more income, your Social Security tax on that piece that comes in is also at a higher tax rate.
So
mathematically, you could play around with it for sure. And we could have a field day talking about what's the best math way to do it. For me, like you said, it's the optics for the kids. Well,
mathematically, assuming all things equal, it's a push.
If the tax brackets are the same, right?
Yep. Let me ask you, because this is really the meat of this, you know, and I started the conversation off with this, you know, I feel really lucky that, you know, my dad gave me the lessons that he gave me. You know, what do you do with, you know, parents watching this now, you know, where they haven't taught those lessons to their kids yet, or, you know, they're getting started later? Because what's interesting for me, you know, I'm in my 50s. And my sister's in her 60s, and the two of us just had this conversation about a month ago. You know, my parents never really discussed it with us one-on-one, but we both picked up the same lessons through osmosis. And so it was amazing. And Tom, I've shared some of this with you, a business partner that I had who, you know, spent all of his money and never had any money. And when you have financial security, it really is quite amazing. And so what is your advice to parents now who are teaching their kids later? Because it's a tough lesson to put, you know, to have somebody absorb that, oh, I'm used to living this way, but now I have to live that way. How do you get the kids to, you know, really change?
Yeah, I think that the lessons that you share from your own life, the kids love that. They love when you, like, consider them almost like a peer or adult-like to have adult conversations. And I think the best way to kind of ease into, I don't want to call it a mask it or hide it, but ease into the conversation is to talk about what you're doing with your own planning, because it gets the conversation going. And even if they haven't done the planning yet themselves, they'll be sitting there saying, oh gosh, I probably need to get to that. And if you as a parent could just say, this is what I'm doing, thought I'd just share it with you, and don't give them the whole kimono, right? Like, give them little bite-sized nuggets so they can appreciate it. And then just say, hey, if you ever want to talk about that more, you need some help, just let me know. I could help you with that.
And, you know, another thing I wanted to ask you, you spend a lot of time working with students and, you know, college students who are soon graduating. You know, if looking back over the last 3 years, or so, let's say, what questions or lessons have you picked up that you wish you had shared with your students 3 years earlier? You know, what's a, like, hey, parents, this is like A, B, and C. This is the, if I'm only going to share three things, these are the top three things you need to get to your kids.
Okay. Number one in my mind is compound interest. I think if you teach your kids compound interest, you have accomplished a lot. And some people will hear that and they'll say, what are you talking about? That's just one topic. No, it's not. It's multiple topics, because when you teach compound interest, in order to compound interest, you have to save money. In order to save money, you have to budget. And then in order to get compound interest, you have to invest. And if you invest, you're going to have to pay taxes. So if there was just one like thing to teach your kids that really covers a lot, it's compound interest and the whole idea of saving early. The second is taxes. It's not what you make, it's what you keep. And this whole thing of tax shock, when our kids get into the real world and they get their first paycheck and they can't believe how much is gone to taxes, that's super, super important. And then the third thing would be, and this was one I missed really early on, and I wish I would have spent more time with my students earlier, is helping them understand the income ceilings to the careers they choose, matched up with the lifestyle that they want to live. Especially in affluent areas, the kids think, oh, I'm going to go bartend in the Bahamas, or I'm going to go work for the Peace Corps. By the way, I love both of those. I think they would both be cool to do for me. But I don't know that the kids are going to sustain the same lifestyle that they were used to being brought up in with those two particular jobs. So again, it's just helping them realize that there's a balance. There's a work-life balance. There's also a financial balance that they need to consider, because what happens is otherwise they pick majors that maybe don't match up with that. And then they go down the road and they're in a career, and 5 years later, they say, oh, I wish I had thought of that. And now they've given up 4 years of college and 5 years of working, which is 9 years, on getting to the place where they say, gosh, now what do I do? What do I do? I'm stuck.
Got it. That's good stuff.
All right, David, thanks for being on and sharing. Really appreciate your openness to do that.
Love it. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time. As always, you're invaluable.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed our episode of Total Sense. A special thank you goes out to Verso Studios at the Westport Library. Tune in for our next Money Chat.